you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Raising the Vibration. We're here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network, and I'm your host, Sheena Metal. On this show, we talk about ascending, evolving, inspiring, and love. Raising the Vibration, of course, the radio show, is an outreach of a movement of peace, love, kindness, and unity that I started to carry on my mom's teachings, both spiritual and humane, on November 9th, 2016. Since then, the radio show started a couple of months later with the first outreach, and now it's become many things, including my spiritual practice, my ministry. The most important thing about Raising the Vibration is to remember peace, love, kindness, and unity. That's what RaisingTheVibration.org is about, and we carry that onto the show with also the cornerstone words for this show, which are ascend, evolve, inspire, and love. Notice love is there twice because love is the most important one. Every week on the show, I gather people that I believe are the brightest and loveliest and most beautiful minds in the world of giving back, in the world of passion, and in the world of spirituality. I'm, of course, your host, Sheena Metal. I'm at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister, and I'm a 26-year talk radio host. I'm almost a 27-year talk radio host in a little over a month, all in Los Angeles, and we can broadcast live from there, and so honored to be a part of the Live Paranormal family. My guest today is a dear friend, a wonderful creative entity, actor, writer, producer. He is the creator of Child of the 70s, a wonderful television show I was proud to be a part of for 4 years, web series. And he is also a great guy to talk to about raising the vibration, a passionate guy, a man of faith, and just an all-around wonderful human being. Please welcome to the show, for the very first time, my very dear friend, Michael Vaccaro. How are you, my friend? It's wonderful to have you here.
Hi there. I am absolutely fantastic. I am fantastic. How are you?
I'm great. I'm wonderful. We made it through. They opened bathrooms in Starbucks again. I feel like I've been reborn.
Well, That's very exciting about the bathrooms in Starbucks. That's great.
I just feel like life is back to normal now because you can go to the bathroom wherever you want. Isn't that strange? But it's a thing. It makes me feel now like life is normal.
I hadn't heard that about the bathrooms. I hadn't read that. But now as soon as we finish, I'm gonna run to a Starbucks and go to the bathroom, go to the toilet.
Everywhere you would go, they would say, you know, order here or delivery or come pick it up, but you can't use our bathroom, filthy plague victims. And so I love the fact that that's the real sign for me that it was the beginning of the end of it all, was when we were once again allowed to use public restrooms. So,
well, there you go. See, for me, I live in a very busy neighborhood, a very busy part of West Hollywood in Los Angeles, California, and I knew everything was back when my neighborhood got very quiet, you know, for a very long time because all the bars closed, all the bars and all the restaurants had closed. So I didn't hear any of the normal ruckus that I hear. But recently now that has all come back. So 2-3 o'clock in the morning, everybody now they're getting out of the bars, and so I hear all the talking and the screaming and the horns beeping and blowing like that. So that's when I knew that we were back, when I started hearing like noise on the street again.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? I love that. Well, you know, and I've been living mostly in Orange County at my other place, and Orange County is different politically, right? So people never really went away here the way they were supposed to.
Right.
I mean, businesses had to follow the rules. You couldn't use the bathroom and you had to wear a mask if you went to CVS. But as far as the beaches, no one was supposed to be on, and the parties no one was supposed to have. and the gathering on the street nobody was supposed to do. Yeah, all that was happening anyhow. And oftentimes in folks without masks because,
right,
you know, because
okay,
that happens.
Well,
because
okay.
There's always people that don't believe. There's always people. It's what makes humanity diverse, and I try to look at that in a raising the vibration sort of way. But I think also, right, there are always those people, Michael, that don't raise the vibration. There are always those people that are doing what they can to rock the boat, to cause the drama, to cause the chaos, to lower the vibration, so to speak, right?
To lower the vibration, and how better to do that than by catching a deathly disease?
Exactly, killing us all. That's a wonderful way to do it. Just kill us all.
That's a great way, I think. So yeah, congratulations to them. I hope it all works out.
Well, you know, I had it. Did you know that? I had it in March of 2020.
You know what? I think I did sort of know that, but I really don't know anything about it. Like, tell me about it. Like, to what extent did you have it?
Well, I had it, so Valentine's weekend, my girlfriend's middle son went to a big party where a bunch of kids rent a house and all give each other COVID in Big Bear. And he came home. We were having dinner with her brother and sister. I was just getting to know her and her family. And he had this high fever, thought he was going to die. So I gave her daughter a ride home so that she could deliver cold medicine to him. And then a week later, he was better, but her daughter was deathly ill. And then a week later, my girlfriend was deathly ill. And I was like, I never get sick. I'm not going to get this. And then I was at a doctor's appointment. And I was laying on a table, and the whole room started, the ceiling tiles were doing figure eights. And I thought, oh, maybe I just haven't had enough to eat, or, you know, you always think that stuff. Well, let me tell you something. By the next day, I had a fever of like 104 and a half. And still, I just thought it was a killer flu. Like, we didn't think we had COVID because COVID wasn't really a thing yet. And so many
right,
people
but
I've
you're talking about March or February,
COVID.
March, right, yeah,
February and March of 2020. So many people I've talked to now are like, oh my God, I think I had it in January 2020. I think I had it in December of 2019. I think a lot of people now are realizing. Mm-hmm. So we got it. We tried to get a test. We tried to see a doctor. And at that time, everybody was like, please stay home and just don't worry about it. So we just kind of suffered through it. Now, he got better. Her daughter mostly got better. But Lynn and I are what they call long haulers, which means we have all the stuff that keeps coming back. And we were talking about it this morning. We figured about every other week we get something again. And you know me. I'm not a person that gets sick a lot. But
You are vaccinated. You are fully vaccinated.
Yeah, but that only stops you from allegedly getting it again. And who even knows if you can get it again? They say you can, but I think a lot of the people that got it again are actually people who have these long haul symptoms. So we're not getting
right.
it again.
That's what I was wondering. Yep.
Just
right.
having a reoccurrence of the symptoms. And I think many people who think they keep catching it, it's just in your body. And I think we're all just going to have to wait until our immune system build up enough that it fights it off. And I've had really weird things, like I developed an allergy to my cat. Like all kinds of strange things that happen when your immune system is low. Suddenly I couldn't be in a room with my cat without breaking out in hives. So it's just slowly but surely, hopefully our immune systems are building themselves back up. But I think as it was with the HIV/AIDS epidemic in the 80s, right, in the 90s, which brought up this whole discussion of what exactly is our immune system, how does it affect us, I think there's going to be another discussion about that when we get everybody vaccinated and there's no longer so much the worry of catching it as there is the worry of, oh my God, what do we do now with the people who have it, which is very similar to what the AIDS epidemic was, right? First it was, let's stop the spread and let's stop people from dying. And then it was like, okay, so here's all the people that didn't die. What do we do with these people now? And I think it's going to be that same thing again. And, you know, I just keep fighting on. Like, I don't worry about it. I live my life. But I think I feel like I'm 10 years older. And that does not make me happy. But I just keep hoping that time, things will get better because I'm the cockeyed optimist, right? But for people who have not had it, because it's not just about not dying, it's also about having this gunk stuck in you for however long it's stuck in you, you know?
No question about it. I am very, I feel very blessed that I did not get it and very lucky that I didn't get this or that I didn't get HIV. And,
right, you lucked out
and both
twice.
Of those, I lucked out twice, big time. And I have continued to be out there in the world, like since the very beginning, since the day they told us to stay inside, which was something like March 15th of last year. I have continued to work. I'm an actor, and even though my industry basically shut down, there was work, and I found it because I needed it. And so I have been working, and I have been out there, and I'm trying to be as careful as I possibly could, but I think knew that there was the possibility that something could happen. So I think I have been very, very lucky.
Yeah,
because I don't want it, and I don't want to deal with it for the rest of my life. I know friends who have had it and went through quite a terrible, terrible experience. And then I know others who,
right.
you know, who just said they lost their sense of taste for a minute. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah, but that's with anything, right? Some people have lingering effects, and some people rock. I'm usually the person who rocks through it and doesn't have lingering effects. So it was actually kind of a surprise for me. But
right.
I believe everything happens for a reason. And what it really taught me, that's why I bring this up, because it reminds me of a discussion you and I had the last time we had dinner. And what it really gave me was, for the first time since I was 14, a lot of time to be at home in my house and think about my life. And we don't take enough time to do that. We're so busy with external factors. And I think that happened on a global level, and I believe spiritually that's why this happened, for two reasons. One, it happened so that we could see with everybody was having the exact same experience at the exact same time all across the world, we realized how alike we all are, and that was something we needed to know. It really made us feel more like one human family, and that was important. And the other thing is it gave us all time in our heads, which we don't allow ourselves anymore, to really think about who we are and what we want. Because everything around me shut down and died. I mean, everything in my life was just done, 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 done. There's nothing. So I had to sort of rebuild my life externally and internally, and being in love for the first time in my life and having kids for the first time in my life in the middle of all this, learning to be a family person in the middle of everything else in my life being a mushroom cloud. So I think a lot of people found themselves in situations where they were very much out of their comfort zone, even more than when you realize they won't let you in the bathroom at Starbucks. And we all kind of had to figure out what our life 2.0 was going to be. And I know you were kind of on that journey of change before this happened, right? With becoming a vegan and eliminating a lot of the negativity
right.
from your life, a lot of things that raised your vibration, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I have a couple of thoughts about everything that you just said.
Please.
I think that deciding that there's a reason for everything, I think that's a choice. And because there can be a reason for it, and there maybe there isn't a reason for it, but I think that's a choice. The choice is maybe to find out what the reason is. And I think that the people who survived this whole thing and came out the other side healthier, and I mean healthier as in like emotionally and mentally and spiritually, those people took this as an opportunity. And so at the very beginning, even though I didn't get sick, I didn't get COVID, I knew that things were going to have to change. And so I decided to take this as an opportunity. All right, I'm going to have time in my home. I'm going to be by myself. What am I going to do? And for the first 2 weeks, I did what every good Italian boy from the Bronx does. I sat and made pasta every night, and I started to gain weight. And I started to feel awful, and I thought, no, I can't do this. I'm going to use this as an opportunity to get better, to get stronger emotionally, to get stronger mentally, to get stronger spiritually and all that stuff. And so I started down, and like you said, it started well before COVID, but it really intensified during COVID. My whole thing, when I got into very, very deeply into meditation. So now I meditate every day for a very long time. And I feel very centered and very grounded because of it. And also, I decided that I really wanted to rewire my brain, which was a very interesting idea to me. Rewiring your brain is something like when people experience trauma, for instance, let's say as a child you experience trauma, I think it rewires your brain, and it makes your brain think differently. And oftentimes in what we would consider a negative way. And so I decided that I really wanted to rewire my brain and think differently about my life, about my friendships, about my relationships, about my work and all of that stuff. And to rewire and retrain my brain, to think in a more healthy way. And it's like habit. It's like creating a habit. They say something like, if you do something for 100 days straight, it becomes habit. Like it
right.
finds itself. It becomes habitual in your bones and in your brain and all that stuff. So that's the same thing.
Yeah,
sort of rewiring
exactly.
your brain. So I started an intense meditation program every single day for a big part of the day. And I really feel like, and it's been over a year now, and I really feel like I have rewired my brain so that I think differently. And I will give you an example, if I may. One of the things that always came up for me was resentment. I am an actor, as you know, and I have worked at this career for a very long time. I started when I was a child actor. And for everybody, it's sort of like a roller coaster. You have success, and then you have a lot of failure, and you have success and failure and all that stuff. But I spent a lot of my time resenting when other people were successful, thinking that, why isn't that me? And so one of the things that I wanted to do in rewiring my brain was I really wanted to get rid of that. Not only did I want to get rid of it, but I wanted to do the exact opposite, which was feel tremendous joy for people when they become successful. And I worked on it every single day during meditation and during journal writing and praying and sending out intentions and all that stuff that I would do. And now I really feel like I'm at a point now in my life where I sincerely want other people to be successful, because I also realize that other people's success means that I'm successful as well. It creates success for me. So that was something that COVID did for me. COVID enabled me to have this time to go through that process, which was quite amazing, I thought.
Absolutely, and I love that. So for me, and I agree with you, and that's so important. And a quick side note before I talk about me, so many of my friends that are creative people, albeit people who have now pretty much moved out of my life, which is what I'm going to talk about in a minute, I would hear that same thing, like say, hey, did you see this movie? And they'd say, oh, I can't watch it because I'm so angry that should have been me in that role. And I would think, well,
right.
I mean, as an actor, right, can't you watch any movie and really envision yourself in half the roles? I mean, I can. Doesn't mean it should have been mine.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It doesn't work that way. But I find that there is a pattern of that. And I think that in many ways, Michael, society encourages that. It pits us against each other. And it, everything does it. The media does it. Culture does it. Governments do it. We're encouraged to be at each other's throats all the time. And from an energetic perspective, that is the chaos and the drama and the lower vibration that comes with darkness and negative energy, right? Is no one's going to get anything done if everyone's at each other's throats. So we're trained sort of as actors when we're young, you differently probably because you were acting when I was training, that if you don't get that role, well, you got to get that because you don't know when you're going to get the next thing. And more importantly, and now we're going to come to what I was going to talk about, you have to take that role and you have to accept it, even if it sucks and people treat you like shit, because you might never get anything else. You know, a very dear friend of mine who was a successful child actor, whom I love very much, he said something very interesting to me on the phone one day. We were talking about both of us were ending toxic relationships that crashed and burned. Our birthdays are 2 days apart, so we're both Aries. And he said once that, you know, when he was little, and his mom told him, go out and get that part. He would do anything he could to get it, show them how talented he was, smile, be charming, so he could get the role, and it worked. And he said, what benefited me as an actor worked against me in relationships and in my private life, because I learned to do whatever I had to do to make it work to get that thing. And I think being taught as actors, you got to take what you get or nothing else is ever coming. We start to take whatever we can get from people. And it develops a pattern, right, of being in situations where we're being very badly treated by people, but we continue to be involved in that situation. I mean, not just romantically, friendships, work, whatever it is, because we still have that ingrained ethic that it's all going to end and there'll never be anything else if we don't keep putting up for this. So then I got sick. I tried to hide it. Eventually, I couldn't hide it. I told everybody that I had work associations with that I had had COVID, and I lost everything, except for my spiritual practice, which flourished. I was going to put the little bit of money I had saved into fixing up my mom's house, and I didn't, because I thought I would have no work during COVID. But apparently, you know, being a spiritual counselor is a very popular thing when everyone thinks they're dying. My girlfriend's a therapist, so she worked up a storm. So that part of my life grew and became wonderful, and I became very, very busy. But all the other parts of my life just went dead. So the thing I had feared my whole life, this thing that an acting teacher told me at 14, don't ever let this happen, it happened. And a really interesting thing happened. I lived. I didn't die. Mm-hmm. The world didn't end. And I kept breathing, and people still loved me, and I didn't have all this stuff to offer people anymore, and I lived. And then, like when you end a toxic relationship and think you'll never be in love again, and then miraculously you find something better, better opportunities opened up, and wonderful things happened, like this blissful experience for me, the Live Paranormal Network. Now I'm in a syndicated network where I've always wanted to be. I do radio and video shows for them. I love them. They're kind people. And if tomorrow they decided they didn't want to do this anymore and it ended, guess what? I'd be okay again. I would go somewhere and start on my own and be fine. Because I learned that when everything was gone, I was enough. And that was such an enormous, even once in a while, I'm sitting around like this, sitting around having a cup of tea, and I still think about, oh, yeah, there's another situation where I should have just bowed out gracefully, but I stayed. And I'm still realizing all these situations that I put myself in. And now when I think, Michael, about going back to those situations, I get this really, like, heaviness in my chest, like when you're having an anxiety attack, because I just mm-hmm. can't believe that I put up with all of that for so long. And that I thought I was doing the right thing by doing whatever I had to do to keep the thing happening. But the truth was, I was doing a totally wrong thing for me, allowing myself to be in these situations that were so toxic. And that's what COVID did for me, you know? It freed me, right. Scared the shit out of me, and then it freed me.
Right.
And yeah. Now I encourage
yeah, absolutely.
To
we're not taught.
What?
Yeah, we're not taught any of that stuff. We're taught all of that exactly the opposite. We're taught, like you said, competition, and we're taught to do everything fear-based, and we're taught
yeah.
to grab what we can because you know it's not going to last forever. That kind of stuff, and to fight for what we want. And again, it goes back to what I was saying about retraining my brain. I had to retrain. I had to rewire
yes.
my brain into absolutely believing with every fiber of my being that not only was I okay and that I was enough, but that but to have faith that I would always be okay, meaning like
yes.
If I send out an intention, I don't have to worry about it anymore. I know that I'm going to be taken care of. I know that the universe is going to take care of me. And that's a hard one because, you know, we are absolutely trained exactly the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you have to fight and you have to squirm and you have to, you know, you have to bite and you have to, like, grab what you can, and you're always going to lose it. And what happens if you run out of money, and what happens if you run out of food, and blah blah blah. And the truth is that even when I was dealing with life through that lens, when I look back on it all, the truth is I always had food to eat. I always had a place to sleep. I always had friends and all of that stuff. And so even then I was taken care of. Even then the universe was taking care of me, even while I was, you know, literally fighting against it. But, yeah, now I don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah. Isn't that nice? You don't have to fight all the time. My mama had this expression, just put your fist down. And I never really, yeah. I think, understood the truth of what that meant until the last few years of my life. But it's true. You don't have to live your life always fighting. Spirit does not want our lives to always be a struggle. But somehow man has convinced us that we have to always be doing this dancing bear routine where we're miserable all the time. And if we're not miserable, then God doesn't love us. And none of that is true. Those are all human concepts. They're not spirit concepts at all. Struggle.
Right.
Jealousy.
And we're actually taught, yeah, we're actually taught that if we don't struggle, we don't deserve anything.
Exactly.
That
right.
In order to get something, you have to struggle for it. You have to struggle in order to get it. It has to be difficult. And there's
uh-huh.
there's this great idea, and there's a book, it's called The Path of Least Resistance. And I'm going to get this all wrong, but I think the basic idea is just like electricity flows, on the path of least resistance, which means it goes where it's easiest to go. Energy does
yes.
the same thing. Energy goes the easiest
yes.
place for it to go. So if you make it easy for your energy to go towards hating everybody and feeling resentful and getting dramatic and feeling anxious and worrying about everything, that is exactly where your energy is going to go. But if it's easier for your energy to go to a place where you have total faith that you're going to get your job and you're going to be okay and love will find you, then that's what happens. And I am an actual testament to this. I'm not just, spouting a bunch of bullshit. This has actually happened in my life. When I let go of stuff, that's when stuff shows up.
Yes, me too.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
Everything in my life has come because I let go. Never in my life has anything ever happened because I held on to it with my, it was always in the letting go. But still, the letting go is still hard for me. And I know that that's ridiculous, but letting go is still a difficult thing for me.
Again, well, it's difficult again because we're not taught that. We're taught to hold on for dear life. So we're taught exactly the opposite. And these things, this mindset, this brain rewiring that I keep referring to, this happens over months and years and decades. And so it takes a long time to get rid of that stuff. It is a constant, I think the word I want to use is recalibration. Like I find myself thinking something that's not even necessarily how I feel. It's just an old habit and I have to stop myself still. I have to stop myself and say, no, Michael, that's actually not what's happening. No, Michael, that's actually not how you feel. No, Michael, don't think that because that's not necessary anymore. I don't need those feelings of, anger and resentment and fear and jealousy and guilt and all of that stuff in order to validate my worldview, because my worldview now is different.
Absolutely. You said something to me once when we were together, and I hope it's okay that I repeat this. If it's not,
okay.
You can hang up really fast. We were talking
okay.
about both of us were on a journey to eliminate bad people from our lives. And I know the New Age
yeah.
community, you're not supposed to say bad, but I'm sorry, some people are just bad. We were talking about eliminating all things negative in human form from our lives. And we were talking about both of our struggles as artists to create our own stuff, right, to author our own projects. And you said to me that in your life, out of a, out of a little bit of a desperation and a very big want and passion to get the job done, you allowed people into your life that you shouldn't have because they were offering mm-hmm. something, like the wolf
right.
coming
yep.
with the cookies to go to grandma's house. And
yep.
when you said that, talk about ringing true with me, much like the thing my friend had said, my Aries friend said to me 10 years ago. I suddenly thought, God, I did that. I have done that so many times in my life. And I don't even think I realized I was doing it. I just think I was so excited to put the project together because the play's the thing, right? That's how we grow up. The play's the thing. It's about the project. Does the thing get made? Are we putting a there and a there? That I didn't realize that I left this enormous back door open for all the wolves to come with all their cookies and eat grandma. And I think that is an Achilles heel of all driven people, right? That we want so much to get the thing done for the world so the world can have this thing, whether it's laughter or learning or spirituality or entertainment, whatever we're bringing to the people, that we sometimes let in folks that are not good for us. It's helping the project, but it's harming us. And inevitably, when it harms us, it harms the project. So it's sort of like a well-intentioned thing, but a very toxic thing. Did I explain that right?
You absolutely did, and I can take that a step further, because what has, again, occurred to me over this past year as far as that specific thing goes, ultimately what that meant was that I did not have faith in myself.
Yes.
What it meant was that ultimately I didn't have enough faith to think to, one, listen to my intuition, which was telling me, oh my God, this person is bad, oh my God, that situation is bad, oh my God, this should not happen, blah, blah, blah. Not listening to that and going ahead with it anyway because I feared, because I was filled with fear, and I listened to that voice in my head, which we all have, which keeps nudging at me about my lack of self-worth, right? And so what has happened is, again, in working on this idea, one of the miraculous things that has happened to me over this past year is that I have started to turn down work. Now, I am a hustler from day one. I am from the Bronx, and I am a hustler. And I would always, you know, say yes to anything. I would, you know, take a shitty job because, yes, that means I'm working. Okay, great. I'm going to make a few bucks. Terrific. Great. I don't care what it is. Whatever. It's humiliating. I don't care. To go from that mindset to saying, okay, oh, I just got offered this job. How do I feel about this? Do I feel like this is going to be a good experience for me? Is this, are there people involved who I want to work with? Is the money adequate? And a few times this year, I actually said, you know what? No. The answer to all of those questions is no. I'm not going to do it. And then, of course, the panic immediately sets in. I think, oh, my God, I just turned down a job. I'm not going to be able to pay my rent. But then I say stop. Like I said, I immediately say, Michael, stop. That's an old thought. It's not necessarily – I mean, it's no longer necessarily necessary. It no longer supports you. And as soon as I – say that to myself and, you know, get back into a more grounded and a clearer place, all of a sudden, the job that really was meant for me showed up. And,
yeah.
And you know, it's been the most successful year for me in my career, which is crazy because my industry has been shut down. But I have had a tremendous amount of work, and all of it has been great work, and it's been well paid, and it's been filled with people who are great, all because I started saying no.
Yes. Yeah, and I have too. And that's the other problem, right, is the boundaries. That's the other conditioning, that if you say no, nothing will ever happen. And I thought, and I know you're probably going to laugh inside when I say this, I thought after my mom died, when Spirit gave me the message to make more of my life the spiritual, and let the artistic part of my life be, you know, a coexistence for a while, that I was going to be different. Spiritual people were all going to be wonderful to each other and not cutthroat like people in the entertainment business. I can't even get there without laughing. No, it was no different. If anything, it was worse because it was mostly very resentful, angry women who were extremely jealous. And I always laugh. They call it the spiritual arts for a reason because the people in it act like artists. And it was the same thing. And every time I succeeded, there was somebody there waiting to change that situation. And so I was forced, and I believe everything happened for a reason with Spirit, because Spirit kept telling me every time something would happen, Spirit would say, but you see how you're enough. You can do this on your own because you're enough. But again, as a young actor, as a young artist, right, Michael, we are raised to believe that projects we author are not as good as projects where someone hires us to do it. That, oh, God, I have to author my own stuff. Like, that's the second grade thing. If you can't get cast in something, you make your own thing. So I always thought of things I authored as, like, what I was doing because the big boys weren't letting me in. And every time something would happen, Spirit would say, but do you see how you're enough? Do you see how you don't need that? Do you see how you could really go do that on your own and not have to pay this person 20, 30, 50% of what you're doing? Do you see how you don't really need to be miserable with this person because you could just do this on your own? And it still took until COVID for me to really listen to that.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I remember when I remember 9/11 when I was in New York.
Sure.
9/11, and everybody talked about, you know, what happened afterwards, about how New York was a changed place and how New Yorkers were different now. We had all gone through this shared experience, and now we were kinder to each other. And we were, you know, we were more compassionate with each other, and we all understood that we had this, you know, this core underlying grief that we all wanted to share with each other. And so for a while, New York became a different place. And then, you know, unfortunately, I think what happened was eventually everybody just sort of went back to normal and kind of forgot about it. And so my hope is that that will not happen this time around, that there is enough of a shift that we won't all, at least immediately, we won't all just run back to being the people we were before. Because that would be a real shame.
I agree. I completely agree. Or that maybe some people will go back to just who they were before. But those of us that are actually interested in ascending and evolving will become people that no longer play into those shenanigans. You know what I mean? We just rise
above
the shenanigans.
Yes, of course I do. Yes.
Okay. Well, there's your drama, but I'm not dealing with the drama. And I've seen it. I've seen little bits of it as the world has come back and people have started offering, talking about TV shoots and things, and then I see it all coming back. All the people puffed up with their own importance that don't really know what they're doing, and the disorganization. And I kind of feel now like when that starts, I just sort of take a step back without desperation, and I think, okay, if y'all figure out what's happening with your ant farm and you want me to come and pull some crumbs around, let me know. But if you don't know what's going on, I'm just going to be over here instead of me getting in the middle of it and trying to fix the whole thing, because it's not my job to do that, you know?
I do.
And I don't feel bad about it anymore, and that's the nice thing. Is that I can have the discernment, like you said, to say, I don't really think this energy is what I want to be in the middle of. And I realize how hard it is for me to really put my foot down with people, whether it's in business, whether it's in life, whether it's in relationships. I don't know where along the line I decided I had no voice, very ironic for a radio host. But in my own life, I just seem so reticent to have a voice. I was the first one to stand on a soapbox and scream so you could have your voice or anybody could have their voice, but I didn't want my own. It just seemed like I didn't want to bother people or be a mess or be the one that always has to be in trouble, or I just wanted to fly under the radar. But the thing about thinking you're flying under the radar, Michael, it never works because you're never really flying under the radar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So what are you...
Yeah.
What are you getting from meditation? Talking about vibration raising, what is coming out of meditation for you?
Well, okay. I What happens for me is that I can. How do I put this? What I realized through meditation was that I have formidable strength that I was not aware of before. That I am a tremendously powerful being. And it's not just an idea. When we talk about intention and sending your thoughts out, oh, I want a car, you know, whatever, you know, that, you know, all the stuff that, you know, Joel Osteen talks about. What I realized is that it's a real thing. It's a real powerful, and I'm going to use a word that makes me laugh every time I think it, but it's a real powerful force. And I laugh because, you know, because I'm a Star Wars geek. And of course they always say, you know, use the force. But it's real. It's an actual real thing. It has strength. It has property. It has mass. And I feel it. And I will give you an example of how it started. If I funnel and focus my thoughts on, let's say, my feet, right? I can literally feel my feet. And I don't mean like feel my feet as I'm walking on the ground. I mean, I can sit in, you know, while I'm meditating with my legs crossed, and I can feel energy, electricity, whatever you want to call it, in my feet. And if I decide to focus my attention on my elbows, I can feel that that heat, that energy, that whatever in my elbows, for instance. If I want to feel the small area in between my two eyebrows, I can focus my attention there and actually feel that place. So then I thought, well, if I can do this with my physical body, why can't I do it with other things as well? Why can't I do it with things that are not physical? And so I started playing around with this idea. And again, it goes back to intention, what I want for my life, the kind of people I want in my life, the kind of work that I want in my life, the kind of creativity that I want to have. And as I started really focusing and funneling this incredible strength that I found that I had, and I do this during meditation. My meditation is not passive. It's very active. I know a lot of people talk about, you know, meditating as sort of, you know, clearing the mind. That does not happen for me. My mind is sort of like putting a pot of water on the stove. And when I meditate, it starts to boil. And things start to move. And that is the force. That is the electricity. That is the energy that is literally moving out of my physical body and moving out into the universe. And I started playing little games with myself to see if, in fact, okay, I'm putting this out there really with this incredible force that I have inside me. And things started to come back. I started to get work, for instance. I started to say, okay, I'm going to make a certain amount of money this month. And I did. And then I did it again the next month with more money. And then the next month with more money. And every month I did more and more and more. And every month I did it. So that is what meditation has done for me. It has gifted me with this tremendous knowledge that I have all of this available strength that I wasn't really aware of before.
I love that. You know what? It's funny because it's interesting you say that, because I talk to clients all the time about this, and they say, I don't have any time to sit around for an hour and do nothing. And I always say, but meditation doesn't have to be, first of all, it doesn't have to be an hour if you don't want it to be. It can be 5 minutes. It doesn't have to be every single day if you can't handle that. It just needs to be time where you are very much in the present and the isness with yourself, and you are open to conversation with spirit. That's all it needs to be. So I'm like you. It's not quiet time for me. It's chit-chat with the universe time for me. But everybody's different. Some people need that quieting of the mind. I don't. I sleep great. You know, I don't have trouble relaxing my brain. But when I get into the isness and the now alone, spirit just starts talking. So, okay, and I enjoy that. I enjoy that it's productive time, and it's okay for it to be that. It just can't be stressful, and it can't be negative, and it can't be a time where you sit around and drive yourself crazy. And what you said about manifestation, I mean, is exactly what manifestation is supposed to be. It's supposed to be you saying to spirit, hey, I would like this, and I'm up for it. You tell me when it's time for me to become busier or to have more jobs or, gee, I'd love, you know, 10 jobs next month and I can handle it. You let me know if it's my time. And really allowing spirit to tell you what's good for you, because doesn't spirit really know better than us? But people so much want to control everything, and they want to decide what their gift should be, and they want to decide what they want, and they know better than the universe. And I'm okay, but that's usually when they crash and burn. You know, and it's like vision boards. I mean, I'm all about the vision board if you want to make one. But remember when you make one that it's really what you're asking spirit for. It's not, you know, it's not a gift card from Target. And think about, like, what do you really want from your life? Like, for instance, I had a friend once in the 90s when these things were really big. What my mama used to call metafizzlers, like a person who was only kind of spiritual when it suited her. Well-meaning sweet girl, but, you know, spirituality for her was asking for what she wanted, like Santa, God's not Santa Claus. So she made her vision board. She's so proud of it. She comes over and shows it to me. And she wanted $1 million, a Maserati, Fabio, for real Fabio, and rollerblades. Wow, okay. And I always laugh at the rollerblades because I thought, honey, you go to Walmart, $30, and get yourself the rollerblades. But that was her vision board, $1 million, a Maserati, Fabio, and some rollerblades. I mean, it's kind of like when you're asking Santa, I want a bicycle, a pony, an Xbox, and a Twisty Roll. Like, why at the end the rollerblades? But I always thought it was so funny. But I said to her, when I saw it, and even in the 90s where, you know, when I was baby Sheena, I was like, what is this about for your life? And she's like, that's what I want. That's all I want. And that's okay. Honestly, if that's all you want, that's okay. But don't send that vision board to spirit and expect them to go, oh, okay, little girl, that's exactly what we wish you had for your spiritual growth. Not that there is anything wrong with Fabio. I met him on New Year's once and thought he was lovely. But she just wanted who she thought was the hottest guy in the world. And it, you know what I mean? So I think we need to, one of the things that we need to make sure we guard against with metaphysics and New Age spirituality, right, is it becomes the home shopping network.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes the things you have to do for your spiritual growth are like sometimes the things you have to do to build your body at the gym, right? You go to the gym all the time. There's probably things at the gym you love and things at the gym where you're like, oh, Christ, I got to do this again. All right, I'll get through it. And it's the same thing with your spiritual path. Some of the things are more work than others. And that's okay because in that work, you feel so much better when it's done. But
yeah,
I think
for sure. I feel like... Yeah, it's different. It's different from the idea that we were talking about just a few minutes ago about struggle. It's the work is just me wanting to be determined and to be dedicated and to have deliberate behavior. That stuff is important to me. And it had never occurred to me to actually ask for a celebrity because now maybe I should ask for Tom Hardy. I don't know. I should look into that.
You give it a try. Give it a try. Right under.
I'll see what happens. I'll let you know. But I will say that. Yeah. Who knows? I will say also that, you know, when we're talking about meditating, I sometimes will meditate for an hour, and I swear to God, it ends, and it feels like it was 10 minutes. So
yeah.
I think that I think that if you just, again, if we don't have, I hear that from people all the time. Well, I don't have time, and I can't quiet my brain or anything like that. Just like you said, it doesn't have to be, you know, we're not Buddhists unless we are.
It doesn't have to be that. Right. It should be, you know, when I was in seventh grade in Baltimore, my mom sent me to a private school, and it was a Quaker school. And part of the school was that every Friday we had to go to the Quaker quiet place and do our thing. And it was like torture for me to just sit there and sit there and sit there for an hour and do nothing. If they had told us that worshiping God quietly is you can have a conversation with God in your head instead of just clear your mind and think about nothing, I would have really enjoyed that hour. But I think we give ourselves this idea that connecting with spirit is supposed to be a void. And it's not. It's supposed to be a conversation. And it's an exchange of ideas, right? You tell spirit what you really want in your life. Spirit gives you some ideas for what they're hoping you will do on your path. And it like with everything with spirit, it becomes a collaboration. But I think we were raised with that Western Judeo-Christian ethic, right, that God commands of us and we get on our knees and beg for a pittance. And it's not like that at all.
Yeah, there's that, and there's also, I think, this other thing that we're taught that, you know, if we're connected to spirit, that means that we have to, you know, that we have to wear sandals and gauzy outfits and be very quiet.
Yes. Right.
And I think that's all fine, but I also think that I can wear jeans and boots and be a shit kicker and still be connected to spirit.
Absolutely. And that's another important thing that I think people don't think about. I talk about it a lot on these shows, my radio shows, that we are supposed to have this wonderful spiritual experience here, right, to walk our path because we're spiritual beings having a human experience. But people forget about the second part of that saying, which is having a human experience. We are supposed to, as we do our spiritual work, and as we perform our service for the world while we're here, we're supposed to enjoy everything that comes with being a human being. And that means laughing, smiling, loving, sex, food, exercise, sitting in the ocean, seeing a movie, whatever it is that is the experience of being humans. We're supposed to do all those things. So becoming a spiritual person, becoming a person of service, like you said, does not mean renouncing your worldly possessions and putting on your Birkenstocks and wandering around your feet like Kung Fu. It's not like that. It's you live your life and you do your thing. I liken it to like firemen because I was always fascinated as a kid by the fact that firemen would work like these four-day shifts. And I would always think, but what if there's no fire? And that's kind of what it's like for us, right? What do the firemen do? Well, they make spaghetti for the other firemen and they pet the Dalmatian and they wash the truck. And then if a phone call comes in, they go and fight the fire. And that's kind of what being a person of service is. You live your life and you love your life and you be kind to other people and show respect and love people and be a good person and do your thing. But then if spirit comes in and says, you know what I need? I need you to make this project. I need you to start this nonprofit. I need you to create this play. Then you say, okay, and you do that thing. But you get a real
It's one of the many ways that religion has screwed us up because religion tells us that we have to be cloistered in order to be spiritual, which is nonsense. But
right. If you're not miserable, you're not doing it right.
And that's
not true. We're supposed to be. You can be very. The history of our world is it full of rich people who took advantage of people? Well, sure. But is it also full of rich people and famous people who use their money and their celebrity to help others? Absolutely. There's nothing that says you can't live well and still be devoted to spirit. And thinking that only makes you think you have to make the choice between being happy and being spiritual. And that choice is never... You're never made to make that choice. That's something that human beings impose on you. Really, like you said, because in religion, which is an institution like any other, there only could be so many people in charge, and everybody else had to be serving that. So if everybody thought they had the freedom to live and be whoever they wanted, well, then everybody would think they were powerful, and then people wouldn't listen the way they're supposed to. But there are enough resources at our fingertips to read and listen to and watch to break out of that and formulate your own spirituality, build your own spiritual palette, and be who you want to be. And I'm so proud of you that you're doing that. You don't even know how proud of you I am. I think you're miraculous.
Wow.
And I hate that we're out of time. Where can people
It's been a whole hour. We've been...
I know.
Oh, well, people can find me. We can go to michaelvaccaro.com. And, of course, I'm on Instagram as Michael Vaccaro and also Twitter at Michael Vaccaro. And I'm also Michael Vaccaro on Facebook. I'm everywhere.
All right. Thank you for being here, my friend. I love and adore you, and I appreciate this. You're wonderful.
What a pleasure. It's been great. I hope we can do it again soon.
Thank you, my friend. You bet. Happy early birthday. The wonderful Michael Vaccaro, everybody. If you missed that, please visit me at chinametalspiritual.com. I am there for all of your spiritual needs. And everywhere on social media, you can find me just at Chyna Metal. And I am also, this show is at raisingthevibrationradio.com, my nonprofit, raisingthevibration.org, and the Live Paranormal Radio Network at Live Paranormal. I'm Chyna Metal. I'm here every Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific time. Until I see you next week, please think about these things. Ascend, evolve, inspire, and love. And, of course, the cornerstone words of Raising the Vibration, peace, love, kindness, and unity. Implement more of that in your life. I will see you next time. Thank you for listening. I love you all, and I hope you all have a wonderful week.